Welcome everyone to Spark the Genius. I am Spark the Genius. The show is Spark the Genius. I'm going to spark your genius. This is actually the first time I'm using that title, so we will see what my guest, Darren Frost, thinks. He is a comedian, and that's all we know. So my show used to be called Celebrity Josh. I've rebranded it this weekend, so you're my first guest under Spark the Genius.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, what do you think of the name?
Well, I'm a virgin too, so this will be good.
All right. Wait, what?
No.
Does the name imply that I'm a virgin?
No, okay. But the show is, using that title.
Oh, right. That's what, yes. Okay.
This is going to be a long interview.
It's going to be very long. So, yes. All right. Yes. So, we're breaking it in. And so, I saw Darren's show last night. He is a comedian here in Ottawa. He's doing headlining at Yuck Yucks all weekend. And it is November 12th, and it's my birthday, by the way.
So yes, happy birthday.
Happy birthday to me. I think in the show you said you are the same age as me, I think.
I am 50, turning 51 in January.
Oh, I thought you said you were 49 in the show.
Well, I said 49 when I was talking about the vasectomy.
Oh, that's when you had the vasectomy? Mm-hmm. All right, so I just turned 49 today, so maybe this will be my year for the vasectomy.
You go for it.
Probably not necessary. I haven't had sex in a long time. And when the... You know, not having sex happened for a while, I thought, I'll have sex again one day, but I'm starting to think maybe that's not actually going to happen. So it might not be necessary. Darren's show is very adult.
Yes, it is.
So yes.
Adult rated.
They warn you on the poster and stuff, so maybe this conversation will get adult. I don't know how clean we'll keep.
Well, we'll see.
We'll see. I mean, it hasn't hurt Howard Stern to swear on air.
Baby steps.
Yeah, we'll see what Apple Podcasts think of it or what YouTube thinks of it all. So you put out the call on Facebook that said you were actually in town, if anybody wants to interview you kind of thing.
Yes.
So what do people normally talk to you about?
Well, this is like 31 years now I've been doing stand-up comedy, so it depends on when someone talks to me, whether it was in the first 10 years it was all stand-up comedy, the years 10 to 20 was about acting and my movie work and cartoon work. And years 20 to 30 is now predominantly cartoon work and stand-up again.
Okay, so we're back on that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, should we like go through a quick life history then?
And sure.
Then figure out how you got so successful?
Sure.
All right.
So I started out where I have, I went to university for marketing and got a degree and then went into...
Where'd you go, York? Or?
I went to Brock University in St. Catharines.
Okay.
Got a business degree in marketing, joined the advertising world, and started doing stand-up comedy, and slowly but surely the stand-up work raised and kind of surpassed my ability to keep a day job. So I quit my day job in 94, I think, 93.
What?
And I haven't had a day job since.
1994?
Yeah.
That was like my last year of university, and we're basically the same age.
27 years ago, yeah.
Wait, when were you working then? Like, was your day job like right out of university?
Yes, yes. I worked in advertising for 2 to 3 years.
Oh.
And I graduated in 92, I believe.
Oh.
So 90, probably more like 95, 96, I guess. Yeah, the numbers work out.
That's when I went to Humber. I was at Humber College in 95, 96.
Right.
And so you were already, because most, I thought, you know, most people would work and then it would take like 10 or 20 years to be like, oh, now I have to quit my, or I don't know, actually, I don't know anybody who's quit their job because they had to do comedy.
Well, I mean, it's really based on how you live your lifestyle.
Yeah.
Whether you can quit your day job or not.
Right.
You know, illusions of grandeur, I probably wouldn't have to wait 10 years for the average person. But for me, I was able to live within my means and know that stand-up was more important to me than this kind of dead-end advertising job. Mm. So I was able to get rid of that and live a basic lifestyle for years.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you realized it early on because I'm regretting it now. I did my first stand-up act in university, like did a little talent show and then amateur night at Yuck Yucks. I remember the owner my first time told me, hey, you're really good. You should keep this up. And I'm like, yeah, and I took Second City and all. But I never really, it didn't occur to me to actually pursue this and focus it. But do you know Steve Patterson?
Of course I know Steve
Patterson. Yeah, so he was in my class at Humber and he was doing copywriting. But,
yes.
And we had a little comedy troupe together. But every weekend he'd be like, oh, I'm staying home. I'm writing my comedy. I'm like, well, we should be at the bars with us. No. And then he's done well for himself. I'm like, why did I do advertising? So
well, the unfortunate part is that hard work does pay off. But in the beginning, you have to work very hard and have little bit of, like I had no social life for 10 years.
Right, right.
My social life all revolved around touring, doing sets, getting better, getting funnier.
Would you think you probably enjoyed that more, though? Like, I look back, and I'm like, I never really liked going to bars anyways. And
I wish I fucked more, but yeah.
All right.
The problem is like, it honestly is. is like for 10 years, I didn't have a real relationship. Mm. I didn't have anything else but myself to have to worry about. Mm-hmm. So that ability to then plunge into stand-up full force is easy. But if you have any kind of life or personal life,
yeah,
stand-up's not for you. So it's a measurement of now I'm 51. Do I wish I kind of in my 20s maybe found a better balance? Mm. Like maybe not as far as you went, but maybe not as far as I went would have probably been a smart thing.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it all just comes with the wisdom of age. You look yes. back and go, oh, right. Like at the time you're thinking, I want to work on this. You're not yes. looking, it's almost impossible to look back and go, no, I should be a family man or whatever it is that you're thinking. So I guess.
But it's a treadmill that you can get into, and mm. it's easy to look back and go, I wish I could have, should have, would have.
Yeah.
But the reality is you only get one life and you can't spend too much time in that lane.
Yeah, and that's what I keep hearing from everyone. There's even on Facebook, like there's literally no point in looking back and going, oh, why didn't I marry that girl when I was 18? Or right. why did I work in advertising for 30 years? It's like, right. what are you going to do about it now?
You got to remember, like no matter what you did, you formed relationships with people over those years.
Yeah.
And it's easy for you to go, well, I'm not on TV like some of my friends are, or I'm not doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
But do they have the relationships that you have? They don't. And they would say the same thing. I have relationships with people that you don't have, and you shouldn't trade that for anything in the world. Like, if I didn't do what I did, I wouldn't have met my wife. Now, I got married later in life, and I have three kids now. If you would have said to me when I was 25 I'd be married to three kids, I'd say, no fucking way. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't trade that for the world. You know, do I wish I fucked more and did more stuff in my 20s? Sure, but that wouldn't have led me to here.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, you could have had lots of sex, and then you'd be like, all right, now you'd be me. Not having sex and not having a career.
Maybe.
Yeah. We don't know. Huh. Yeah. It's I don't know. I don't know if anybody's completely happy, like, with everything they did. Like, I even hear the most successful people. Like, I read an article with Alec Baldwin saying, oh, you know, I'm 60. I just wish I had more time. I wish I was 50 again.
Right.
I'm like, you're Alec Baldwin. Like, even if you're not satisfied with...
Alec Baldwin's probably lived the life of three people.
Yeah.
And he just doesn't realize it.
Yeah, because he doesn't know. He can't compare it.
No.
Oh, right. Like, I was listening to...
If I want to compare my life to Dave Chappelle, I have not lived a life.
Yeah.
But if I want to compare my life to Dave Chappelle, I'm the father to three boys. I love my wife.
Yeah.
I'm still together after, you know, 20 years.
Wow.
And that, to me, is more important than whether I've done David Letterman or yeah. been in this movie or that movie. I really don't care about that. Yeah. Now, it's just whatever I have to do to fund my ability to have my family be happy. That's all that matters to me.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I regret, because I don't have the family. And I hear everybody like you and see people with families and even in their Instagram bio. Like, Barack Obama will put dad and then president, or same thing with Justin Trudeau. It's like, oh, right.
Well, 50's not too early.
Not too late, you mean?
Yeah, it's not too late, sorry.
Yeah, no.
I don't think it's not too... To me, especially if you're a man, like,
yeah,
I hate
possible.
To be, you know, gender-based, but yeah. you could easily find someone, still have a family,
yeah.
still, you know, as long as you're healthy, you could live into your, you know, 80s, and really, my attitude is you got to get your kids to age 18. Then after age 18, a lot of people can die, and yeah. you can kill a lot of people, it doesn't matter. I yeah. just got to get my kids to age 18. That's yeah. it. That's my contract. That doesn't mean I'm stopped being a dad at age 18, but that's my responsibility.
Yeah, no, and it's true. Like, I sometimes message Dean Graziosi, who's like a Tony Robbins partner kind of thing.
Yep.
And he's like, hey, I didn't have this kid until I was 50. Like,
right.
he has a couple of kids from another marriage, but he met a girl who's like 35. So he did it. Even my uncle, he had like, I think, three kids from another marriage. But and then after that, he met my aunt when he was like, I don't know, like 48 or something. Mm-hmm. And she was 30. And they had three kids, and he's still alive at 87, and my aunt just passed away at 70. So you never know.
You got to remember, yeah. the person you are at age 50
yeah.
has way more patience than the person you were at 25.
Oh, I look back now, and I'm like, my God, like the
so
stupid
So would you have been
I
a
did.
Good dad at 25 with the yeah. time and ability to look after your kids like you are at 50?
That's
so
true.
So you talk to a lot of people when they have kids in their 50, they're a lot better parents. Because they have a little more patience,
yeah.
a lot more life experience. They don't sweat the small stuff. These are all things that you need as parents.
Yeah, that's true. Because I sometimes read questions on Quora, and one young guy was like, I'm 21 or 22, and I've got this kid, and I just regret it. Like, I
yeah.
wish I was out partying at bars.
Yes.
And I'm like, no, no, no. like, enjoy this now. You'll be glad in 20 years. Like, oh my God, I've got a kid. Like, you know.
My 20-year-olds, yeah. You know, when I'm 40 and I still can go out and hang out and do crazy things with them.
Yeah.
You know, but when you're 50 or 70, that's a different ball game.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's always going to be a trade-off.
Mm.
The grass is always going to be greener on the other side. It's a cliche, but it's true.
Yeah.
Someone's always going to seem better off because we live in a world that's based on fucking social media and everyone looks like they're doing great and yet they're crying themselves to sleep every night.
That's the thing. That's, yes, and that's what I have to keep telling myself. You can look at everybody's pictures and everybody's kind of miserable. So I don't know why that gives me comfort to know that everybody's miserable.
Well, because then you realize that the things that you're going through isn't that odd.
Yeah, that's true. You don't feel like you're missing out. It's like, no, we're all, because even
everybody,
like,
feels like they're missing out.
Yeah, like Louis C.K. talks about how, like, when you just sort of sit there for a minute in your car and the demons come and you're like, even Louis C.K. makes $5 million in a minute kind of thing. So I don't know.
But when he's not jerking in front of people, but yeah.
Yeah, that's the whole
thing. Yeah, that's a bit of a downfall for him, but yeah. Everyone thinks that, you know, I look on social media and Ted, my friend, is doing great and all this.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, time's a great equalizer. 5 years from now, Ted's going to be divorced. He's going to be sharing his kids with his wife. He's going to be pissed off at the world and he's going to be full of regret.
Yeah.
So you never know from day to day what's going to happen.
No, I even messaged a friend of mine from university who got married young and he's got like the three kids. And just like last year, I was trying to reach out to all my old friends. He's like, yeah, we're just getting a divorce. And I'm like, you getting a divorce? What?
Where'd that come from?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, who knew? Like, it was the perfect relationship kind of thing.
Right.
So, and then even, my old, this guy I worked with who was at Humber as well, he's got like four kids or something, but he's always messaging me like, hey, like he runs an ad agency, but he's like, how do I get into voice acting? I need to make more money to pay for the kids and whatever. So, yeah.
Yeah, because kids are not fucking cheap, man.
No.
They are very expensive, and my kids are great. They don't have like, you know, dreams of being hockey stars or all the other things that take an exorbitant amount of money.
Yeah.
But just the basic survival and needs of children
is
very expensive.
Yeah.
And there's stress and pressure. And, you know, I couldn't have handled it in the 20s because I never would have married my wife in my 20s.
Yeah.
I would have married someone that would have been in the business. And my wife isn't in the business. And I thank God every single day she's not in the business.
Yeah, I remember my friend Phil, who was a director, and he was always telling me, like, You don't need to meet somebody like you. Like, you can meet just somebody stable that you get along with and stuff. And yeah, he was 46. He met a girl when she was 26.
Right.
And then they had three kids. And then he died of cancer at 52. But so I keep thinking, oh, I'm almost there. But
that might have been a great 6 years.
Yeah. No, I'm sure they had a good time.
Yeah.
You know, he moved to Calgary. He was, like, living on the farm and stuff.
So right.
You never know.
I think it's important that you don't marry someone in your business.
Yeah, like, it feels like, I mean, you sometimes see people that do it and they're like,
and it can
you
be
know,
great.
Jerry Stiller's parents or something.
It can be great
for
some.
Yeah.
But every single person I know that's ever dated in the business, except for maybe two or three couples, they've gotten, you know, separated or divorced and they're angry. And it's because sometimes when your whole life becomes one thing, especially when you're both in the same business, there's no getting out of it. There's no separation. Like for me, as soon as I get home, we don't talk about show business.
Yeah.
When I'm on the road and I'm doing these things or I'm hanging out with comics, it's shop talk, shop talk, shop talk. I can't handle it anymore. I need that separation. I'm not Darren Frost, a comedian. I'm just Darren Frost. And I can wear many hats and I prefer to wear many hats.
Mm, I like that. So how did you meet your wife then?
We met online. I was talking. We were actually neighbors for 2 years, didn't even know it. And I was talking to her roommate, and they, you know, she laughed at, oh my God, we used to live next door to each other, literally next door to each other.
Wow.
And so she's like, my roommate who lived there too, her name is Brandy, you should talk to her because it's just funny that we're all talking now. I started to talk to her, and here we are 20 years later.
Wait, okay, so you met your wife online, and then you discovered talking to her.
No, so what happened was, in the 90s or early thousands, I guess it would be early thousands, late 90s, early thousands, my whole life was Thursday to Sunday, I was on the road performing.
Hmm.
Monday to Thursday, during the day, I was trying to minimize my costs and not go out living in Toronto. So I was online a lot, talking to people.
Yeah.
So I was in a chat room with a girl, and she's like, oh, I used to live in Toronto.
Oh, like a Yahoo
Toronto.
Chat
yeah,
room?
Yeah, like back in the day, bulletin
old school.
Board or whatever,
yeah.
Old school. And it was just like, oh, I live in Toronto. Oh, I used to live on Palmerston. I live on Palmerston.
Oh.
She's like, oh, I used to live at 419 Palmerston. I go, I live at 421 Palmerston.
Huh.
And she's like, oh my God, you're the guy.
Huh.
And I go, what do you mean? She's like, our kitchen would look into your bedroom because the houses were so close. They would see me on the computer. Like, if the window's here, I'm here doing it on the computer. And they'd make fun of me. They'd, like, come in at, like, 6 o'clock. They'd be, like, making dinner. He's on the computer. They'd leave. They'd come back at 9 o'clock. He's still on the computer.
What? that.
So I'm like, what the fuck? So you used to make fun of me? Yeah, so that's why she's like, you should message my roommate because we used to make fun of you. So that's what I did. I messaged Brandy, who's now my wife, and I said, I'm the guy you used to make fun of. And she's like, well, I still live in Toronto. We should go for a drink. We went for a drink, and that was 20 years ago.
Oh, so Brandy was still living next door?
Not next door, just in another area of town.
Yeah, right.
But she was my neighbor.
Right, right.
For 2 or 3 years.
Wow, that is crazy. That happened to me once too. I was like chatting in a chat room and the girl turned out to like be 3 doors down the hall in my apartment building.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just said hi and never married her.
Yeah.
But that's crazy. That sounds like you could, I mean, if you wrote that in a TV show, it'd be like, that's not realistic at all.
Right. People would think it's just, you know, some writer making stuff up.
Yeah, it's like too contrived. But I love the annex. See, that's always been my dream, live in the annex again.
That's where it happened.
Yeah, yeah, at Palmerston.
Yeah.
I used to live on Dalton and on Huron.
Yep. So Palmerston's famous in Toronto because it had all the lights and it's like kind of the heart of the annex and it's all the big old houses.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's such a bohemian lifestyle. And it's like, no. It's not bohemian. It's just old houses where you can't do laundry and run a microwave at the same time.
Right, right, right. That's the thing. It's not the, so it's like for kids, students or like hippie university professors to walk around and
think
like,
it's cool and it's whatever, and then you move out of there and you're like, why'd I live like a rat for 5 years?
I lived in the basement on Dalton and I literally, I had skunks under the front porch. I'm like, what am I doing? And then the basement flooded. So like I was walking around in sewage for a while. Mm-hmm. And then eventually somebody just broke in and took all my stuff with the key. So I guess they used to live there. I was like, all right, that's enough. And I moved into a condo and I'm like, oh my God, a dishwasher.
Yeah.
I would turn it on. I'd listen to it at night and be like, oh, it's so soothing. I'm so rich now.
That's right.
Well, that's a good story. And what did she do for a living or whatever?
So at the time, she was in school to be a radiation therapist. So now was a radiation therapist for years, and now she's a manager of the Cancer Center in Barrie, Ontario.
Oh, man. So when we say, well, you know, we're not helping, you know, comedians, we're not curing cancer, she actually is helping cancer patients.
She is, yeah.
A better person than us or you or me.
Well, that's and she's actually the one that found my cancer because I had cancer. And she's the one who said, this mole doesn't look right. You should go get it checked out. And so I had to have it all cut out. I don't know if you can see that in the video.
Oh, yeah.
So it's all cut out.
Whoa.
And literally the doctor's like, you know, this is not good. You know, this gravitated really quickly. Went from a doctor seeing it to like being cut out in a matter of weeks. And my doctor said, you know, your wife pretty much probably saved your life because this wasn't good.
This, and that's too contrived.
I know, it sounds contrived.
We've got to change the story. Me. It's ridiculous. Meet some random girl on, oh, I live next door to you. Oh, I'm a cancer
and
doctor.
And she saved my life, and I mean, she's the mother of my children.
Yeah, and none of that makes
sense. And then a rainbow appeared in the credits.
Yeah, okay. Nah, not believable, but whatever. We'll stick with your story.
Sure.
That's insanity. Okay, so that's a good story. And is running, like, before you met her and stuff, living the comedian life, like, is that everything I would have thought, oh my God, I'd be going to clubs and meeting girls every night.
No.
I wouldn't have,
No, really? It's like, it's getting up at 8 a.m., driving 8 hours, checking into a shitty motel for the most part, especially back then, playing some dumpy bar, being yelled at, being called every name in the book, you know, having a couple beers afterwards because you have to force yourself to self-medicate, and then going into bed into a room that you don't even take your clothes off, you sleep on top of the comforter, you wake up at 8 o'clock in the morning and do it again.
Yeah, because that last night, Trevor Thompson, he talks a lot about that, like driving around and staying in, you know, crappy hotels and stuff. And I'm like, And part of me thinks, like, maybe when I was younger, it might have been fun. Like, I could pick
Well, that's the thing. Everyone thinks it's romantic, right? Yeah. Everyone's like, oh, my God, it's great. You're crashing on hotel floors or friends' couches and eating hot dogs every day. You're 21. Yeah. It is great. When you're 51, not so much.
Well, that's the problem, because I look back now and I'm like, oh, maybe I would have wanted to do that. But now, what would be the point at all?
No.
Like, so then I wonder, what the hell do people do? I guess you just, I mean, you have to have done it. It's like, I keep trying to think about getting into radio because I was always wanting to do that. And I did a little hosting and stuff. But every time, even 10 years ago, when I talked to Howard Glassman, Humble Howard,
yeah.
He was like, what are you talking about? Like, you're too old. Like, what do you want to do? Go work in a small town for, you know, years living on your, and then work your way up and then eventually, like, get some gig in Peterborough. Like, you know, I'm like, oh, right. Like, so some of these jobs, I guess you do have to do from the beginning to enjoy it when you're young.
Yeah.
But at 50, you know, what do you do? So that's what I'm trying to figure out now. Like, I mean, you know, maybe
the radio world is even worse than comedy.
Yeah.
The radio world is like, you know, budgets are being slashed and people are being replaced by people who just work out of one location and it's on 10 radio stations. Mm-hmm. And those jobs, they're being a jack of so many trades. It's like all my friends in radio, more than half are not in radio anymore. Yeah. They're kind of bitter about the whole experience because they thought what you think radio is, isn't what radio is.
That's what I wonder. I picture, I guess in my head, it's Howard Stern, all the celebrities coming to you.
No.
but not
even
really.
Not even WKRP.
Yeah.
Even if you have a romanticized version of that, it's not that. It's like you're in a computer, you're making little quick cuts, you're talking to Sandy, who just won some chicken dinner at the Chuckle Hut or whatever, and that's what more it is than, oh, I'm talking to Beyonce now for 10 minutes.
Yeah, which is, I mean, I guess that's good to know too, because I look back, because I did call, I emailed Howard like when I was 27 saying, can I come by the Edge? And he's like, yeah, and I never went. I don't know if it was too early in the morning for me or something.
Right.
And I keep looking back going, oh, man. But now I'm starting to, even just talking to you, I'm like, maybe advertising was cool. I did travel the world. You know, they sent me to Tokyo or Bahamas, and it was all free, staying in fancy hotels and shooting commercials. I wrote a commercial for Leslie Nielsen once and shot that with him in Miami.
Yeah, I worked with Leslie Nielsen as well.
Yeah, really cool the guy.
And, yeah, nice guy.
And so, I mean, you know, maybe all that wasn't bad. The one thing I wish I could change is having locked down maybe my girlfriend when I was 18 or in my 20s or something, or even when I was 40.
But then you could also look at it like, you know, I don't want to keep harboring the point, but then maybe you wouldn't have went to all these places.
I know. I guaranteed I'd be looking back going, nah, I could. Why did I have the kids? I could have been on Saturday Night Live. So
Or I wouldn't have been able to go to Tokyo for as long as you can.
Yeah, yeah.
Like right now, I can't tour for more than like 5 days because I have the kids and a dog and life kind of sucks me down to a new place, and I'm fine for that.
Yeah,
but those are the parameters that now my life.
Yeah.
If I was in my 20s, I couldn't have done that.
Mm-hmm.
In my 20s, it was like I got to go wherever I wanted. It doesn't matter if it was for comedy or advertising.
Yeah.
You still were able to do whatever you wanted
because
you only had yourself to worry about.
Yeah, yeah. It's all different. I even, like, I've been applying for radio jobs randomly, and I never hear back because you have to work your way up. But I finally, 2 years ago, I heard back from one in Yorkton, and then another one in Timmins, and I was like,
Yorkton, Saskatchewan?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, you've heard of it.
Oh, yeah, there's not a town I haven't heard of.
Wow.
Or played.
That's true. Yeah, so they had an entry-level job for 20 grand where you'd go to City Hall for every day, and then once a week you'd be on air, and I was like, I was just afraid. This is before the pandemic, but I was afraid, like, do I want to be stuck in Yorkton? And then Timmins was like, oh, why do you want to come north? I was like, I don't know if I want to do, so I didn't talk to them. And then I heard back a month ago from a station in the Paw, Manitoba.
Mm-hmm.
The Paw?
Yeah, the Paw, yeah.
And, you know, they want me to do their morning show, and I was like, huh. I was tempted, and I really thought about it for a month, or a week, and I talked to Howard and everything, and I was just too afraid to go up there for a year.
Partly, you know what their problem is? I can tell you what your problem is.
Yeah.
Just from what you've told me.
Yeah.
And I'll use a stand-up comedy analogy.
Yeah.
You want to be a headliner before you do an open mic.
Mm.
And what that means is, if you're going to want to get into radio, you have to stay or start in a market
like
Yorkton or the Paw
or
Timmins.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it may be, if you're already saying, do I want to spend time in anything like that?
Yeah.
You're projecting 10, 15 years of staying in one market. That's not how radio works.
Yeah.
Radio works as you get your sea legs in a small market,
then
you move up to a medium market, and then if you're good enough, you might get to a large market.
Yeah.
But no one starts at a large market. No one starts in an Ottawa or Toronto or Vancouver.
Yeah.
They all start. So I have a friend who's a comedian.
Yeah.
She took radio broadcasting, and she was going to start in a small market, and she didn't want to, and so she never got into radio.
Mm-hmm.
She stayed as a stand-up comic, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But she knows that if you want to be in radio, you got to start in one of these small markets.
Yeah, and it's not that. I mean, I understand that, and I think it's more my age. I feel like, you know, if I was 20, I'd be like, sure, I'll go live in a small town and, you know, hang out in the bar. Like, but just the thought now, when I knew, because I would have started the job right now,
right,
that, okay, and they wanted me to commit for a year. And I look back, I'm like, well, they can't make me commit. But even, say I do, I'm turning 50 in a year. And I'm like,
right.
And you know, 5 days a week, so I would never be able to leave this town other than maybe drive 6 hours to Winnipeg.
No, you wouldn't.
So it just scared me. So I was like, it's not that I don't want to put in the work. It just made me consider my life. But because I was like, oh, I feel like, I guess I've been taking stand-up classes the past year. I feel like I'm finally getting it. I'm like,
okay,
oh, I can go and do open mics in Ottawa. And I'm like, so that would really be nothing but that town doing the radio. So I don't know. It's tough to say. Like, in a year I might go, okay, I literally did nothing in Ottawa and I could have been doing radio for a year in the Arctic. So I don't know. But yeah, no, it's just, it just makes you wonder. It just, like, what gives pleasure in life, like, what,
well, you yeah, only yeah. you can determine what makes you happy.
Yeah, exactly.
If you want to do stand-up, then you better not go to the Paw or Yorkton or any of those places. If you want to do stand-up, then you've got to say to yourself, I'm probably not going to have a radio gig, and I'm going to have to stay in a big market and maybe use advertising to be my day gig and at night work hard and put in the hobby time of trying to get better at stand-up.
Yeah.
You know, Rodney Dangerfield didn't start till he was in his, you know, late age of his life.
Oh, that's good to know.
Okay, so, I mean, there's lots of examples. You know, Louis Black was a playwright for years before he ever did stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
He only hit in his kind of 50s as well. Mm. So there's lots of examples of, like, you know, if you put the time and energy and work into it, it can happen.
Yeah.
It's just, it's the same numbers as anyone. People start in their 20s. Only so many people became successful enough to make a living out of it.
Yeah.
Same thing as in later in life. There's only so many that will make it. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, part of the fun is the journey. It's not making it.
Yeah, and I was literally listening to a podcast today called Don't Keep Your Day Job. And she was interviewing this woman in Australia, Susie Moore, saying, who wrote a book called Let It Be Easy. And a big thing she was saying is that, you know, people always wait to be happy thinking if I just achieve this goal or this promotion, whatever. It's like, no, it's the moments. It's the journey. Even the people who are really successful. Yeah, Kathy was telling a story about it. I forget his name, but he wrote American Beauty and Six Feet Under. Mm-hmm. And he was saying, I was happier now that I can make any movie I want right now. It'll be greenlit. But I was happier when I was living on a floor without a mattress in New York trying to make it and stuff. Like, that's
well,
the journey.
First of all, you're hungry.
Yeah.
You're young.
I think anything's funnier when you're young. I mean, I could be sleeping on a floor, backpacking through Europe.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure, but you're hungry, you're young, and you don't know what's going to happen, and that's exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting, yeah.
You know, so I tell all young comics, amateurs, open micers, whatever you want to call them, enjoy it now.
Yeah.
Because right now, it's not about the money.
Yeah.
It's not about anything but chasing laughs.
Yeah.
Because the second you make money at stand-up comedy,
yeah,
something dies.
Yeah.
And in any art form, music, anything, as soon as money comes into it,
mm-hmm,
it dies a little.
Yeah.
It's just a fact. I don't know anyone that could probably argue with that.
It's funny. My sister used to say that. She's like, oh, I don't want to, you know, get paid to do my acting or my music or whatever. It would ruin it. And I was like, are you crazy?
Well, it does. It doesn't.
But it might change it.
It doesn't ruin it.
Yeah.
It changes it. And I'll give you an example why. You know, last night, do you think I was happy with that set?
I don't know.
No.
Okay.
That was like a 6 out of 10 at best.
Yeah. Why not? Or why? Or, well.
Because one, I haven't done shows in 2 years.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So you try talking in front of a paid audience for 45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah.
Right? With your thoughts. Some of my jokes I didn't even finish.
Hmm.
Right?
Normally because you forgot them?
Because I forgot halfway through the punchline to a joke.
Huh.
Because I haven't done this in 2 years.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm the headliner.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to bring it.
Yeah.
The middle and MC, they're supposed to bring it, but not as much as the headliner.
Yeah, we don't have expectations. We're like,
okay, that guy was all right, but he's not the headliner.
Yeah.
She's not the headliner.
Yeah.
She is the headliner. I have expectations.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
Because I could talk about art all day long,
mm-hmm,
but, you know, Saturday night, those 200 people are all paying $25 each.
Right, right.
To see something.
Yeah.
And to see something that 99% of the time works.
Yeah.
So there's no art.
Yeah.
In stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
Once it's for money.
Yeah, it's true, because I've been doing my class shows, and I'm like, I don't feel pressure in the sense, because I'm like, you know, you guys come to a class show. Like, you know, if I make you laugh, it's a bonus. Like, you should be happy. And, you know, open mics, everybody sucks. We all know that. Mostly it's just other comedians in the audience.
Right.
But yeah, when people are like, hey, you know, it's my 20th birthday, I'm here, we've all paid $20 or whatever, like, you better be funny. And that, I felt like last night was a tough crowd. I don't know why.
The crowd was fine.
Yeah.
It's like, look, you know what, on a Thursday getting that many people, it doesn't matter why they're there or what is right or wrong, that's bodies in the seats.
Yeah,
and I'm happy to have it.
Yeah.
And they don't know it's only 6 out of 10. Like, lots of people came up to me after the show, that show was great, oh, it was great.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to go, no, it wasn't. I'll be like, okay, thank you.
Yeah.
But it wasn't great.
Yeah.
It was 6 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
You come back and see Saturday Late Show, it's going to be a completely different show.
Because
I'll have 3 more shows. Yeah. I'll have 3 more days of working on my act and writing newer jokes to kind of fit in and stuff. And I mean, that's why I have like 5 DVDs and 3 albums, because I write a lot of stuff. I get it to a point where it kills all the time.
Yeah.
But that's through hundreds of shows.
Yeah.
Then I film it.
Yeah.
And I know it's great at that, or at least the best I can get it to.
Yeah.
Whereas last night is like the first show ever.
Yeah.
In a sense.
Yeah.
It's a new world. It's a restart.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't even know how this joke ends.
Yeah.
They don't know that. They think, oh, it's supposed to end like that. That just was a bit of a miss. No, I didn't do half the joke.
Yeah. But of course, you know, I was there and I didn't notice anything like that because I wouldn't know.
Right.
It's like, that's what they say with musicians. Don't go, oh, I'm sorry, I got to start the song again. They don't know if that was part of the song or not. Just do it.
Right.
And yeah, I was watching you and I was like, how could I ever get to the point where I can do like an hour? Just so much stuff. Like for me, writing my 5 minutes or 10 minutes even for the class show is like, wow, 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But to be able to just go up there and for so long, I guess it does take a while to get there.
Look, you know, it's a normal kind of passage to your first 5 or 10 years, you're finding your voice.
Yeah.
No matter how good you are, even if you're a headliner by then, very few attain that.
Yeah.
But, like, well, for example, Bobby's a good example, the host. Bobby is now pretty much a headliner.
Yeah.
He hosted because he likes me, and he was just had a weekend off, so he'll do me a favor, and he'll host the show or whatever, be on the show.
Mm.
But, you know, Bobby's, like, I think maybe like 12, 14 years in, and I remember seeing Bobby 5 years ago, and the leaps and bounds that he's even done is amazing. Because by the time you are 12 or 14 years in, you've kind of found your inner voice, you kind of know what you want to do, and that's when you start writing material that's more from your point of view and based on your life and experiences, and it's weighted in something, so it's more rewarding.
Yeah.
And then, you know, from then on, you can, you know, the world's your oyster.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what I found, like, even last summer, like, not this summer, the summer before, I entered the Yuck Yuck Summer Contest, and I didn't get past the first round. I was like, I don't know, I wasn't kind of happy. But I took some classes on Zoom over the winter, and then some at Absolute Comedy, and then entered this summer, and my night, like my first round night, I came first place. I was like, oh my God, like I felt like I was getting better. And then in my class show, I feel like it's getting better. I'm still only doing 10 minutes, but even just you start to think about, what do I actually want to talk about? And I think part of that comes with age too. Not that I've aged since last year, really.
Right.
But if you look at Louis C.K.'s early stuff, he's like, same thing as any 18-year-old's going to talk about, well, this is what I saw on TV, or here's a movie I thought was funny, but you don't have the life experience to really go into. Although there's a 17-year-old girl in my class who's doing very well. So anyway,
there's an example, like Louis C.K. used to talk about this quite a bit back in the day, that, you know, his first 45 minutes was not even really him. It was more like trying to make the audience laugh, like you said, experiences that we all have watching this or going on this and doing this and TV shows and all this.
Yeah.
And then he kind of shit-canned all that and then started writing from his own life experience. Mm-hmm. And that's when he started producing like an hour every year or 2 years. Mm-hmm. The whole Louis C.K. model, I'm old school, I call it the George Carlin model.
Mm.
And even before that, there was the Moritz Saul model. There's lots of comics that have turned over a ton of material all the time.
Mm.
It's just because we're in a social media world now, no one knows before Beyonce. It's all post-Beyonce the world.
Right, right.
But, you know, once you start writing from your life experience and you have your own voice, lots of material will come.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because now you're just talking about what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, so I have like 20 new minutes. I want to do a little bit of it last night. I did a very little bit of it, but my first show back in 2 years, I'm like, I better play some hits here because I got to buy some time.
Right.
So, you know, hopefully by Saturday late show, I'm doing a little bit more new material. And, you know, I released a new album in February of 2020, right when the pandemic hit.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was it. I couldn't tour it. So normally, by now, I'd already be recording my next album in February 2022. But I've got like 2 minutes of new stuff that's tried and true.
Yeah, and that's, even the pandemic, it relates back to what we're talking about in terms of, you know, everybody's going through crap. I keep beating myself up going, I sold my condo 2 years ago. Why have I not been traveling through to LA? Or why don't I have a master's degree? But nobody's really, you know, at least I've done some classes. I feel like I've learned some stuff this year and I've stayed alive. And maybe that's the most I can, you know, I should thank myself for that and just not be like, why did you waste this 2 years? You could have been doing...
A couple people took advantage of it. A couple people went back to school or did online classes. That's great.
Yeah.
But the majority of the world, I think, suffered through a depression like we haven't seen in decades.
Yeah.
I'm not saying ever, because I didn't go through the real depression, and I don't want to trivialize that,
or
a world war. But, you know, this is the biggest modern event in our life that I think society as a whole has suffered some kind of depression. And so it's easy to go, oh, that guy got his degree, or that guy did this, and I haven't done anything. I've written 2 minutes in 2 years.
Yeah.
Like I said before, in 2 years, I would have written a new hour easily.
Yeah.
I've written 2 minutes due to life, depression, mental illness, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a real thing.
Yeah.
And not only are we going through that, I think society's going through that.
Yeah.
And it makes it tougher, because it's never good, even in a pre-pandemic world, to compare yourselves to other.
Yeah.
But in a post-pandemic world, it's pretty hard not to.
Yeah. Yeah, because I was having, I was turning, just before the pandemic, like I sold the condo, and then I was like, I'm going to travel, I'm going to live in hotels. And I kind of just realized, no, it's not like being 20 and backpacking through Europe. Nobody's going to talk to me in the Best Western in Thornhill.
No.
What have I done with my life? And then I was so depressed, I don't have kids. So I Googled, like, when are people most depressed? And I thought it was a thing that, like, sometimes, like, an ad on the internet will fill in your age because it knows how old you are. And it said, you know, people are most depressed at 47.2. And I'm like, yeah, of course.
Well, yeah.
But it's actually true. Like, it was the exact age I was
right.
that they've shown that, you know, kind of people dip. That's the most they question their life. And when then they kind of come out of it and they get happy or whatever. But so it's kind of hard for me to separate because I was so into it going, oh my God, my life. And then the pandemic hit. I almost felt good about the pandemic. I was like, oh, I don't have FOMO now. Like, it's like everybody's at home not doing anything. So right. I felt okay.
Right.
And it's almost like coming out of the pandemic now, I'm like, oh crap. Now people are out partying in bars again and Frosh Week kids are doing their things and everybody's out going to Disney with their family and I'm right. not again. So,
right.
So yeah, I'm kind of having the reverse. But I think even in my comedy classes, I've met people who are like me going, I like the pandemic because I'm afraid that it's, you know, people are going to be doing their things again and I'm not. Like there was a guy in my,
I mean, that's going to happen. I mean, for me, when SARS hit, one of my kids had health issues, so I couldn't go on the road. Mm. So while everyone in my industry in acting and voice and even stand-up complained that SARS kind of affected everything, yeah. I couldn't work anyway. So my attitude was like, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm stuck here anyways. I got health issues. I got to take care of them. Mm-hmm. There's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, when this pandemic hit, I just was like, well, now I'm just a full-time dad.
Yeah.
You know, my wife works in a hospital, so financially we're okay. We're not doing great, but we're not broke or starving.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm lucky just in that regard.
Yeah.
And so I'll just be a full-time dad, and that's what I did. And that, I didn't hate it.
Yeah.
I didn't miss stand-up comedy like I thought I would because maybe I'm in a different place. But yeah, I also feel like the world's starting up again, that this idea of, do I rejoin the rat race? Mm-hmm. Am I going to be this hustler like I used to be? And I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
I've just made amends with that.
Yeah. And do you, what do you think the peak of comedy would be? Like, what would you strive for, wish you had? Like, you know, if I was saying, okay, I'm going to focus on comedy, like, what would my goal be? Like, it used to be get on Carson and get a sitcom or something.
Well, I mean, the success is defined differently by everyone.
Yeah.
Right? So I don't know what, you know, some comics to success would have been Carson or Letterman. But for me and my style of comedy, I would have to water it down so much that I was never really interested in doing that.
Yeah.
I was interested in getting my thoughts down and presenting it in a way that...
Who's that?
That's my son. Presenting it in a way that I wanted to do it. And I've done that. I've released multiple DVDs. I've done it all myself. I'm a one-man band. Mm-hmm. I hire directors. I hire film crews. I hire editors. Mm-hmm. I do the artwork for them. Everything is done by me mm-hmm. or hired by me through people.
Yeah.
I'm a one-man band.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with that. But it takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of hustle. And I've released, you know, in total 7 or 8 specials now, which no one in Canada has done except Ron James.
Okay. Well, there you go. You're like,
and I love Ron James to death, but Ron James also had help through CBC, and he didn't have as much time and effort into his stuff like I had to do.
Yeah,
but if I was to say independently, I'm the top comic independently to release the amount of stuff that I've done.
And so doing a special, what does that mean? Like, your stuff's probably too, you know, you're not on CBC or whatever.
No, but I mean, I've done galas and TV shows and CBC to get my name out there, and I water it down just enough that I can, you know, drink the Kool-Aid and go, yeah, TV's important.
Yeah.
But, you know, doing a special means, you know, hashing it out, finding that 45 minutes to an hour, that takes a year to 2 years. Then hiring either I'm going to self-direct it or hire a director or get a friend to direct it for me, which I've done all of those things.
Yeah.
Then it's hire shooters with, you know, the right cameras at the time.
Yeah.
You know, HD, 4K cameras, whatever.
Yeah.
And then getting the footage, hiring an editor, sitting in the editing bay, editing it.
And then what you do is selling the DVD, like, individually or whatever.
Yeah. And online. And then I also rip the audio and I sell that to XM and it's played on XM radio.
Oh, wow.
You know, kind of thing. So it's a one-man band.
Yeah.
And that's how I've been able to do... But even that isn't enough. Everything I've just told you is not enough to make it in this country.
Right. I mean, there's a limit. I mean, has anybody made it in Canada? Like, there's kind of a limit, right?
Well, like I said, define made it. What's made it?
I guess,
is it a certain income? Is it an idea that I haven't had to have a job in the real world, say, for 25 years? I mean, that's making it. I've had more free time than my parents combined. That's making it.
Yeah, no, I guess that's true. I mean, I've heard of you, so that makes you pretty famous.
Well, I mean, but fame's a weird drug, and you can't really chase it. It's like a cat chasing its own tail. It's kind of a pointless thing to strive for. It helps.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. It helps that if you're famous.
Yeah.
A little bit. You know, fame on stage gets you about 5 minutes.
That's what they say. Like, you know, for 5 minutes, you're Jerry Seinfeld, but after that, it's okay. Make me laugh.
Yeah.
Like,
make me laugh, monkey. Make me laugh. That's the reality of it.
That's all you're getting. And, I mean... You know, like, I mean, what is any of it, really, I guess? Like, you know, Tom Green kind of, he was on Letterman and all this stuff, mm-hmm. and now he's just living in a van. I guess he's in L.A., but he was back in Ottawa for a bit, just vlogging about shawarmas and stuff.
Yeah, but, you know, like, I think if you talk to Tom Green, I've got a picture with Tom Green. I think I maybe shaked his hand twice. I have no idea who he is as a person.
Yeah.
I have no allegiance to him whatsoever. I've never worked with him financially.
Yeah.
But if you ask Tom Green if he's happy, I'm sure he probably is. Because he probably wasn't happy when he was in the pit of all that fame.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, at your show last night afterwards, I was hearing three guys talk about, they were talking about him going, yeah, he used to have a, you know, show on Rogers where he, because like Ottawa people.
Yeah,
you know
the
he's
whole
legend.
Show. Hump and the then, Dead Raccoon.
And then I saw him on, I saw him do the New Year's show 2020 and I talked to him. And his whole act was, because he's my age exactly as
yeah.
well. And he was talking about, you know, my parents thought, or I thought at this age I'd have kids. And, you know, he's talking about getting older, like kind of all the same thoughts I had. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I guess we all have those thoughts. And,
yeah.
But you see, I mean, he's living in a van. He's got his money. He's kind of famous, I guess. I don't know. It's hard to know because he's kind of got a parallel life to me. Like I had a Rogers show in Toronto at the same time he had his and I discovered
right.
him. And so I feel like in an alternate universe, he's kind of like me if I had gone to Hollywood and married Drew Barrymore and whatever.
Right.
But yeah, I guess I don't know. I do know that when I get on stage and I kind of make people laugh and I'm standing there with a mic and when I was seeing your stage, I'm like, oh, I want to be like, I still like the idea of that. And I need to get it wrapped my head around. It's not, I'm too old to do it. Like, do you find it's different now? Like, would people look at you differently? Go, oh, he's a middle-aged man rather than you were the hot young kid. Like, is that?
First of all, I was never the hot young kid.
Yeah.
That's number one. Let's get that out of the way.
Right.
Number two, I've always been a character-looking dude. And a character-looking dude is, doesn't matter what age you are.
Yeah.
No one says Eddie Pepitone's too old. Nobody says Gilbert Gottfried's too old.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, any headliner worth their salt in America right now generally is over 40.
Mm-hmm.
Name me one real superstar headlining stand-up comic under 40.
Yeah, I don't know.
There you go. So that's also a factor.
Yeah.
People have assigned age to this, but they haven't actually done the research. It's a knee-jerk reaction to say, oh, young is... Because you know what it is? It's a young person's game only because of energy. If you've got the hustle at 50, you can do it.
Yeah.
But if you don't have the hustle at 50, it's probably not going to work out for you.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Once again, what do you define success by? I don't know. Only you can set those barometers. But for me, it's about the hustle. And the hustle never changes. From the day I was 21 years old to 51. If you don't hustle, it ain't going to happen.
Yeah, and that's what the podcast was saying today. The woman was saying, don't ask yourself what does success look like. Ask what it feels like.
Right.
You know, and how do you feel? And it's like, how do you want to feel? And there was a headliner I saw at Absolute. I forget his name, but he was a couple of weeks ago, and he was 65, and he just did an hour and stuff. He's
sure.
a really tall guy. And
right.
I was like, okay, great. Yeah, there's no... And it's funny. I think I personally am just obsessed with age, but I look back to when I was younger, when I met Leslie Nielsen, I'm like, I wasn't thinking, oh, he's 80. Like, I'm like, oh, I like this guy. He's
Leslie
funny.
Leslie Nielsen's great.
Yeah, like, it was never... I never thought about it when I was young, about how old people
because
were.
Because there wasn't social media,
yeah.
and Hollywood wasn't... Look, Hollywood now is very young... slanted young, right? All the stars are all young, all were excited.
Yeah.
But if you look at any generation, there was always boy bands, you know, in the 80s there was fucking NSYNC and Backstreet Boys and New Kids on the
Block.
In the 70s there was the Jackson 5 and the Osmonds.
Yeah.
There's always been kid culture.
For sure.
Just the problem is now kid culture is so huge and all-encompassing on social media that maybe too much attention is to that and not enough to talent and other things. In other decades, young people didn't drive entertainment as much as it is now.
Yeah.
So that's why you have guys like Martin Scorsese saying, oh, Marvel's bad. It's because, you know what? In the Marvel world, young and old people can watch those movies. You know what? The average 17-year-old's not going to watch The Irishman.
Right, exactly. Like, you know, the joke is that, you know, the old people will go and watch the whatever Marigold Hotel or whatever because it's
right.
about old people and stuff.
Right.
I'll probably get to that point. And I realize, yeah, I do like watching... Like, it never occurred to me before to think about how old someone was. You know, I liked watching Liam Neeson kick butt. But the older I get, I'm like, oh, I want to see people my age kick butt because I think, oh, then I can kick butt too.
Right.
I keep saying, hey, Tom Cruise is, you know, almost 60. Good.
Yes.
I can be doing
yes.
stuff as well. So, you know, everybody can be inspirational. And I don't know what my point is. But yeah, you're right. Because, yeah, like when my sister had all her New Kids on the Block magazines, that was the one thing. You had Teen Beat magazine, but it wasn't everywhere, and the internet is so focused.
Yes.
I guess because young people are more on thing, but also it's like the nature of you know, who's going to sit there scrolling through Instagram and TikTok? Maybe grown-ups, not as much, because maybe kids are growing up with it, but also grown-ups
have
other things to do.
Yeah. Marketing's always been tinged towards the young.
Yeah, young people are and sexy and, like, you
yes,
know, it's...
It sells maxi pads and it sells drinking boxes. Don't ever forget, that's what the world, that's what makes the world go round, the dollar, and the dollar is marketing, and marketing is easy to market to kids because they're young, dumb, and full of cum, and it's an easier sell than trying to convince a 70-year-old, 50-year-old, 40-year-old person to do something that's set in their ways.
And I was a copywriter for, you know, 30 years. I know it's always like, you know, put in the young mom, you know, like we're selling, that's our target.
Look, for 10 years, if you had a Scottish accent, you'd fucking do a, you know, 100 commercials a year.
Yeah.
You know, it was terrible. It was fucking hack, but they did it because they knew that that got people laughing in their car on their way to work, and I can sell them a maxi pad that way. It's just the reality of it.
I did a Scottish accent. Did you ever see me as the little mini man for Nutrigrain bars?
Yes,
I was like, you know, they're not, well, I'm not sure why they call them mini because they're huge. And that was just my Scottish accent because I thought it was funny. It is funny, actually. And I just noticed in the trailer of Uncharted, what's his name? Tom Holland. Like, he's this big Scottish guy that says, oh, I'm going to beat you up or whatever. And Tom's like, what? Because he doesn't understand his accent. And I was just thinking about yesterday how you couldn't do that with any other accent.
No.
Like, if it was a Chinese accent or Indian. But he's white, so you can sort of do the funny stuff.
Yes.
It's the last funny accent you can do.
Yeah, that you can make fun of.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I used to rant for years. Like, if I go anywhere in Canada, if I make fun of Quebec, they fucking love it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because making fun of the French is still one of the last things in Canada that everyone can get behind.
It's okay. They're white and they're, you
know. Yeah, they're French and they're obnoxious and whatever cliche you want. But you go to Quebec and they fucking support their own arts. Yeah. And I wish every day that my parents fucked in Quebec.
Yeah. People are telling me that. Who was I talking to? There were some people in my stand-up class who are French. And now they're trying to break into Canada. But they say in France.
Why?
In Quebec. There's such a rock, like, if you're even middling, like, you can get an agent within a year and a manager and you're a rock star and everybody loves you. Yeah.
Fuck English.
Yeah.
I've told every young comic I've met that can speak French, I've only given them one piece of advice. Mm-hmm. Just keep doing French.
Yeah.
You want to do English, that's fine.
Yeah.
But don't ever take away from the focus of you doing French.
Yeah.
Because you still have a public that supports you and wants to hear from you.
Yeah.
Whereas if you try to go to English, it's all watered down and you're competing with 1,000 other people and it won't be unique. I guess maybe a unique perspective being French, but it's just in Quebec, they support their own. It's like Aboriginal humor now is fucking all the rage.
Yeah.
And good, because for years they've been supporting their own and vote with your dollar. And if you can make money from it, fucking go nuts.
Yeah. Janelle. Do you know Janelle?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So she came out to see the show, my teacher in my show, Pierre Bro, last weekend. Mm-hmm. And then she was telling me all about how she was just in the, I was like, how do you get discovered? She said, well, I don't mean to brag, but I was just doing the show in a Nuktatuk or something, like a festival. They've got some.
No, a Cowit and none of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then she's like, CBC was there. Now I'm going to be on some show. And she's, she produces her own show, like called Got Land or whatever.
Yeah.
And all that's like great.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. If you can.
Do you know how long that, I mean, there's a, I haven't read it yet, but there's a great book about the history of Aboriginal comedy that came out from the guy who did the famous book called The Comedians. Mm. And it's supposed to be a great book. I haven't read it yet. I've read his first book, The Comedians, which is outstanding. But there's been a long history of those people supporting their own, and humor has been a big part of their culture.
Mm-hmm.
That it's great now that they can vote with their dollar and be played at, whether it's an Ottawa Yucks or up in none of it, wherever it is, and their own humor.
Yeah.
And support their own. Because they've been doing that for decades.
Yeah.
For decades. And I wish fucking I had that kind of support.
Yeah.
But, you know, of course their argument would be like, you're white, you got tons of support, which I understand. But good for them that they've been able to take care of the marketing finally and get it out there.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's exciting. Like, and that's why I tell people, if anybody ever asks me, I'm like, if you have a niche, like if you're, you know, there's a girl in my class who's lesbian. I'm like, you've got a whole audience there. They'll support you. It's like Annie DeFranco is the music star for that community.
There's a whole thing in comedy, especially in the late 90s, early 2000s, where the kind of old guard versus the new guard, the new guard being young comics talking about their backgrounds, whether they're East Indian or gay or whatever it is.
Yeah, like Russell Peters or
whatever.
Something.
Yeah. Right? And the old guard is, well, you shouldn't just have to talk about that. You should be funny. You know, you know what?
Mm.
Whatever your thing is,
yeah.
Do your fucking thing.
Yeah.
Because the number of times I've been told you shouldn't do dirty, you should be able to do clean, it's never not going to go away being told what to do.
Yeah.
Fuck everyone.
Yeah.
Just do what makes you you. And if that means that it's, yeah, you're Russell Peters and you're talking about your dad, or if you're Aboriginal and you're talking about that kind of humor, who gives a flying fuck?
Yeah.
I'm not buying a ticket to your show.
Yeah.
So what does it matter? I think that's done.
Oh, that's just low battery. So there you go. We'll keep going there.
Okay.
Until it dies.
Yeah.
I got to get a new battery. And every time I went to Apple and they're like, have you backed it all up? I'm like, oh, I haven't backed it up yet. So
yeah.
Whatever. But yeah, we'll wrap it up soon. You've got lots of interviews to do today.
But that, whatever your thing is, take advantage of it.
Yeah.
Like, all he does is ethnic humor. Who gives a fuck? I don't do that.
Yeah. Because, I mean, a show's not that long. Anyway, if you're doing an hour, you can do an hour on the ethnic humor or whatever. Like, not...
Who cares?
Not everything has to be so generic that, oh, you just talk about airplane food that everybody understands. Like, just, you know, there was the guy, the big fat guy who just talked about eating all the time. And, like, that's...
Yeah, jumping it.
Yeah, kind of thing. Like, I mean, and I remember that. And it's like, you remember... You know, everybody's got their thing. Like,
look, even someone like John Panette, who is very middle of the road in his humor, there are so many stories of John Panette offstage treating comics with great respect, more respect than you'd think some of bigger comics would do to other comics, but they don't. I'm not going to get into that. But my attitude has always been, in the beginning of my career, I dog Carrot Top like a punchline because everybody was doing it, and I thought I wanted to be cool. Then I kind of stepped back from it, and I was like, why am I making fun of this guy? He doesn't do what I do.
Yeah.
He has a fan base.
Yeah.
He's never treated stand-up comedy like a douchebag or denied it or talked bad about it. Who gives a fuck if he wants to do what he does? And then I actually saw one of his sets and I kind of laughed a couple times. And I'm like, I've been an arrogant motherfucker.
Yeah.
And concerned about my own ego and what I do more than just fucking watch it and either like it or not. And if I don't support it. Yeah. And if I don't like it, don't talk about it. Just who cares?
Yeah, so much. I mean, that's a lesson for life and everything. Just why are you focused on taking other people down? Yeah, exactly. Just and for anything. Like, if you don't like it, don't watch it. Like, but it's so much easier to try to tear other people down. And it's like, you know, it's just human nature to be able to crap on people rather. Hey, why don't you focus on your own thing?
And, now, you know, am I going to stop ever making fun of things that are on TV or doing that on stage? No, I'm not.
Yeah.
But am I going to go on fucking Yelp reviews or online and just go, this guy should be stopped and blah, 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 blah?
Yeah.
No, I'm just not going to like it. I'm not going to pay for a ticket for something I don't like and then not like it and then report back I don't like it.
Yeah.
That's the world we live in. It actually happens. People will check out my clips. They don't like it. They still come to the show. They don't like the show. And then they complain about the show.
Yeah.
That's the world we live in.
Yeah. And that was the other thing I heard in the podcast today. The woman said it's, rather than getting upset about when people, because the bigger you get, it's more it's going to happen. People are going to come, you know, if you put yourself out there, they'll kind of take it down, try to take it down. She said, you know, rather than being upset that happens, what did she say? Just accept that it has to happen or something. Like, it's just going to happen. And it's just, you know, you go, okay, well, that's their thing. They hate me or whatever. But, you know, you got to.
Sometimes in comedy, people forget. Yes, first of all, in Canada, we don't have freedom of speech.
Yeah.
But even the level of freedom of expression that we have is not freedom from consequence. And I'm one of the rare comics who does the kind of comedy that I do that I still believe in freedom of consequence.
Yeah.
Meaning if you're going to go on stage and someone doesn't like something, something's going to happen. Yeah. Do I think that they should run out and try to cancel everybody like they kind of are now?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
Yeah.
But do I think they have a right to say they don't like something? Yes, I do.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's a whole other podcast about,
yes,
you know,
of course.
What's the difference between, oh, I don't like it, he sucks, versus... You know what, I'm going
to
call
this. Stopped.
I'm going to call his company and try to get him fired and, you know, take away his livelihood and go after his wife. And, like, that's, that's him. Everybody thinks they're a hero now and they're going to, I mean, that's a whole other thing. And that's kind of interesting, too, because I keep thinking, like, why didn't I do these things in the past? That, I mean, the past was different. There wasn't the internet when I was very young and, and things.
Thank God there was no internet, because some of the clips that people would be able to post to me, I would just look back and shiver at some of the shit that I had said. And 99% of the stuff I've said on stage, I actually stand behind.
Yeah.
And I might not have phrased it correctly, but I know what my intent is. Unfortunately, because the kind of comedy I do, people think I'm misogynist. They think I'm homophobic. They think I'm a lot of anti things. And in fact, I am not. And if you actually listen to what I say and you're not drunk, you will see that I'm actually someone that sides with all of those things.
Yeah.
And I'm against, you know, misogyny and sexism. And I'm very pro... any kind of movement for the most part.
Yeah. And people don't understand comedy. Like, the fact that you're saying something, the joke is that, yes, I understand this is offensive. That's why it's funny. Like, there, was, there was an ad in Marketing Magazine like 20 years ago. It was for the Marketing Awards. And it was a picture of like a guy working on his portfolio while his wife is giving birth or something. Everybody's like, it's so sexist. Why? I'm like, but, and I wrote a letter to the editor saying, no, it's only funny because the writer and you know that the man shouldn't do that. It's right. Not a right. Like if you thought that was okay, then it's not a joke. You're just like, it's a, so I was trying to explain humor to people, but they, you know, most people don't get it, or they just, yeah, look at it face value. He said this thing. I'm not looking at the sarcasm or the context and just going to try to attack them, because most people aren't putting themselves out there and creating things. It's much easier to be just a warrior online and just look for things to attack. And I guess, you know, it happens to the best of us. Like even, what's his face? Who's the guy, the big guy now?
Mike Ward in Quebec, right?
Yeah, that's the Canadian. Who's the black guy that I'm thinking about right now?
Oh, Dave Chappelle.
Dave Chappelle, yeah, he's always can, but he's big enough that he can sort, and he's black, so he can get away with it.
Well,
a bit
you
more.
Know, look, I'm a fan of Dave Chappelle. I've not watched any of his two last specials because I don't want to get involved in that fight because I don't. But, you know, some people probably have their right for freedom of expression and say what they want to say, but it's gone so far down the rabbit hole now, I don't know if we can actually have a real intelligent conversation without an agenda being presented.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I mean, politics is a whole other thing. I've always been very liberal, but now I feel like I'm becoming more conservative, but not because I'm more conservative, it's like because liberal is doing its own thing. And then
both sides have stretched so far out that I don't know. I don't even feel comfortable labeling myself anything anymore.
Yeah, I don't even want to say because I'm a thinker. And I think, who was it? Was it Chris Rock? Or somebody said, like, why are you one thing? Like, if you've made up your mind before you've even heard the issue, like, that's not thinking.
Yes.
That's like, I am conservative. Like, I don't understand saying I'm conservative. No matter what the issue is, I stand this. Like, it doesn't make any sense. So I'm a thinker, and I don't think most people think. Like, they don't have critical reasoning skill. Or a lot of people don't, and they don't know how. I mean, maybe they don't even teach you how to think. But that's a whole other thing.
But there's a famous clip that went around. So, you know, all these people said, you know, if George Carlin was alive, he'd be siding with Dave Chappelle and, or, you know, yelling about cancel culture and all this. And there's a famous clip that went around where George Carlin was on Larry King defending Andrew Dice Clay. But he wasn't actually defending Andrew Dice Clay, what he said. He said he has the right to say it. Right. But he then kind of says a speech that he probably would not be pro-Dave Chappelle right now. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the pro-Dave Chappelle people have been using Carlin as their kind of like, hey, he would be with it. He'd be down for it. Right. You know, and you should really search out the clip. I don't want to get into it because I'll probably not say it correctly.
Yeah.
But it's a very important talk that he has about it. Mm. And it's very good. And it's very about, you know, comedy. And I've tried to always punch up. Sometimes you punch down. And I've done that too. I'm not saying I'm proud of it, but I have done it. Sometimes you miss the mark. That's the other problem with comedy. You can't always have home runs. And that's also the problem with social media and people filming. You can't always have home runs. Now, am I saying Michael Richard deserves to have a walk on that thing he did? Mm-hmm. No, that was a completely different scenario. But a comic that kind of fumbles through something and doesn't have the best speech on it, and then the next day goes, I meant to say it like this. Mm-hmm. Intent needs to be taken into consideration. And a lot of times intent isn't.
Yeah, I mean, it's comedy is a whole other thing. And I was reading recently that, yeah, when they start coming after the comedians, that's, I don't know, it's that's kind of the end of the line for society kind of thing. And then
yeah, I've heard it all. It's the last place for freedom of speech.
And even in terms of punching up and down, I was watching a conservative podcast talking about, you know, Dave Chappelle's punching down. But it's like, no, I mean, the other view is that the LGBT or the trans community has a lot of power, especially outsized for their numbers. And so he's in a way punching up because they're trying to destroy his career. So a lot of it comes from just your perspective kind of thing in terms of what.
But there could also be an argument of, Dave, you got into trouble last time. Why even talk about that now? And then there's the argument he should be able to talk about whatever he wants and whatever affects him.
Yeah.
And so he should be. So there's lots of arguments and counter arguments and there's lots of, you know, things to be said there. But, you know, there's another famous clip of Patrice O'Neill on Fox talking about intent. And it's also something that is important that comics or comedy fans search out and check out. Because intent is everything. Mm-hmm. And if you told me that you meant to say this and this is what your intent was, if I'm a comic and you're a comic, I have to believe you.
Yeah.
And there has to be this sense of that's what they meant to say. They weren't meant to be hurtful. They meant to say this. And if they do, if they fuck up, they should be and apologize. Sometimes that's enough.
Yeah, and I guess the big problem these days is people see words as violence. So, like, you know, you can argue that if, you know, if you really believe that if somebody makes a joke about something, it's going to lead to the Holocaust, then you believe you're justified in destroying anybody who makes a joke, you know, so...
In their own head, I understand the thought pattern. I don't agree with it, or I don't do it myself, but I understand how A to B to C to D works. I'm not stupid. Yeah. They're not stupid. They know, you know, a lot of this could be dealt with if people just kind of cut down the anger. And I don't mean to say that they shouldn't be angry.
Yeah.
They have real reason to be angry. These marginalized groups have real reason to be angry. But I don't think, and it's hypocritical because I'm an anger-based comic, but a lot of stuff doesn't get done when it's all based in anger.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a whole other discussion about what, you know, what problems really exist in society right now and what, I mean, a lot of it's very much like religion, I think. If you believe something exists, like everything is racist or something, then that's what you believe and you see everything through that lens.
Right.
It doesn't matter what actual statistics are or... And then if you're trying to impute intent in people, like...
Yeah, you try to tell someone that's black or Aboriginal that racism doesn't exist because you have a scientific thing to show that it doesn't exist as much as they think it does.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, exactly. Even my friend from Africa, we get in an argument all the time, and he's like, it becomes a whole thing. But it's funny, because I don't remember ever thinking about this stuff when I was younger, but of course that comes back to your white privilege. But it never occurred to me. Like, I had black friends. Like, I didn't think.
Of course.
I don't know if we talked about it all the time, and now it's nothing but that. It's interesting. But I try to just not even discuss it, because I don't want to get banned off YouTube, and I don't want to...
Hey, I never met anyone that I knew about that was Jewish until I moved to Toronto.
Hmm.
But obviously, I knew people that were Jewish.
Right.
They were around me when I was growing up.
Yeah.
It just never came up.
Yeah.
I just assumed religion wasn't a big thing for me.
Yeah.
So, and even growing up. So I never came into discussion. But then once I moved to Toronto, one of my really good friends was Jewish, and I got educated a bit, and it's like, okay, this is good. This is why I moved to a big city.
Mm-hmm.
It's like my argument yesterday about a guy saying, you live in Toronto, a lot of blacks and gays there. And I'm like, yeah, that's why I live there. I want to be a better person. I want to learn. If I just stayed in my small town, white town, all I'd learn is that. So then these big world issues that come up, I'd only have that reference.
Yeah.
Right? And that's not a reference you should have. I'm not saying it's wrong that people stay in these towns, but for me, it was wrong.
Yeah.
I wanted to learn and to have a bit of a life experience.
Yeah.
And also that parlay into my stand-up and my outlook on life. Mm-hmm. But I think it's important that you kind of expand your horizons.
Yeah.
Whereas I find... Today, I don't know if people expand enough of their horizons. There's a lot of team playing and a lot of closure and side playing, and I don't know if that's good for society. I don't know.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you spend so much time online in your echo chamber and you only talk to fellow liberals or conservatives and you all confirm each other and everybody else is the enemy. And that's why I think I'm in a unique position, because I was always very liberal. Well, again, I guess things have changed, but I feel like I can see both almost anything. I can see where people are coming from. I don't automatically assume conservatives are evil. I can see both sides of abortion, like whether you agree or not, I can see the argument. I don't just see that everybody's evil. Like even I was trained by Al Gore to talk about climate change. And,
right.
And even that big conference was all, you know, oil companies are trying to destroy us all. And now I'm like, well, maybe they aren't, you know, maybe they aren't evil. They're just doing business and we do need power. And so like, yeah, I wish we could all just sort of say, okay, let's just stop assuming that everybody has ill intent. I mean, some people do. But assume that most people are kind of decent people, which I honestly believe. I think they are.
I think they are one-on-one. I think most people try to be good humans.
Yeah.
Most.
Yeah.
There's some that don't.
I keep remembering the jerks I know that are awful people.
And I mean, I have a good friend in comedy that 90% of what he says online I hate and I cringe.
Yeah.
But this guy did me a real solid young in my career, kind of helped me out immensely.
Yeah.
And it's hard for me to now go, I shouldn't talk to this person because I don't agree with 90% of what they say.
Yeah.
When if he didn't do what he did for me, I would have been in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
And so it's hard for me to disassociate from that person. I don't agree with anything he says.
Yeah.
I'm very vocal and very anti what he says,
yeah.
like whenever I can. And we disagree with a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
But I still resort back to that is the person that helped me out once. And it's hard for me to go, you know what? Yeah, you helped me out once, but you're doing this.
Yeah.
And unless you're really doing a lot of damage, then I would. You know?
Yeah.
But if you're just saying things that it's like just to get people upset and stuff and argue... It's hard for me to go, I can't be your friend anymore.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, before the internet, you wouldn't know what your friend thought about Trump or any, you know, the stuff. You would, like, it's we weren't sitting around yelling politics. Like, you just know that they're a decent person.
Half the people who created Facebook now, if you watch any of the documentaries about it, they regret
Yeah.
Everything they ever did.
Yeah.
Because this isn't what it was supposed to be.
Yeah, and I guess it's just, you know, humanity is humanity, so it's...
It's just eating itself alive. It's the snake that's eating its tail.
Yeah.
And Facebook isn't helping.
Yeah, so we'll see. But that was a whole other discussion, too, that Ben Shapiro was just on Joe Rogan talking about AI and what, and he was saying, like, it's going to be crazy. Like, if they're literally creating this world that the company owns that affects how you see people. But for young people, it's not that different because they've been used to just growing up and looking at a tablet. And even for the pandemic, they were like, well, I'm always online. Like, what's the difference? They're not used to talking to people in person and what'll happen. And that's a whole thing. But that's why I'm glad that we still get on stage and do comedy and like getting in front of people. Like, it's not the same doing open mics on Zoom. It's just...
No.
It's not the same as just being...
I did zero shows on Zoom.
Yeah.
I did one show that eventually got canceled that I was going to do a drive-in. And the only reason I said yes to it is because then I could scream about it for years to come in my act on how it's wrong and it's stupid.
Right,
but
right.
I didn't feel like I'd do that unless I at least tried to do one. I think comedy in those environments, hey, there's lots of comics that do a good job and they can do it.
Yeah.
And that's great. It's just not for me.
Yeah.
It's not for me.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's... Especially you know, when you're talking to the guy and stuff, you need that intimacy kind of thing. Even when I was just doing my like class shows behind the glass, I was like, I felt so disconnected with, you know, it's such a different thing just being like, hey, how's it going?
Now, I might be wrong, but I just, every Zoom show I've seen is very kind of, I don't want to say 80s because then it sounds negative, but it's very one way and it's very kind of animated.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's a presentation.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
But for me, even last night, I may not have been great or happy with that show. There were still highs and lows and quiet and loud. And I just don't think the Zoom is able to do that.
No, it's a different medium. Like the teachers kept saying, you know, because you have to pause for a few seconds because there's the delay. And if you can't talk over people, and it's a very different rhythm. And you can see people's faces and address them. But just the delay is very different than being able to just react or make a little face. Mm-hmm. And then the laughter builds among... And that's almost... And that's the difference between watching some like a show on TV and being in an audience because you're all laughing together. And you can't really do that on Zoom because once you start laughing, now you can't even hear what the comedy's saying.
But I'm also lucky that I do cartoon voices. So during the pandemic, I just, you know, I created a studio in my home and in a closet, and I could just walk in a closet and make my money.
Yeah.
These other comics are forced to do Zoom, had no other resources. Right, so I understand why they had to change.
Yeah, yeah.
And Bob, and if I didn't have to do it, I'm lucky. Yeah. And I know I'm lucky. So it's easy for me to say, I don't do them. Well, you know, what if I was broke and I had no money? I would have to do them, and maybe I'd sing a different tune. But because I didn't need to do it, and I'm not saying I was making a lot of money in cartoons. Yeah. I made enough.
Yeah.
You know, I worked it out. I made about the same amount as CERB, and I never collected CERB.
Oh, cool.
So I made about that much.
Yeah.
Which was enough for me to go, I don't need to do these Zoom shows.
Yeah.
I'm trying to put myself in situations now with this age of where I can win, not win.
You mean the age you are or the age of the internet?
Or both.
Whatever? Yeah.
I don't want to put myself in situations where I might fail.
Yeah.
I don't want to put myself in situations where I'm going to feel bad about myself, mental illness-wise, afterwards.
Yeah.
I don't want to put myself in any situation I'm probably going to beat myself up over for weeks to come.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to fight bookers now who don't want to have me. Yeah. I'm not going to fight venues to try to book me if they don't want to book me.
Yeah.
I'm just going to invest my time in places that want to have me in my style of comedy, and that's it. And if they don't, then I'll find some other way to find my income.
Yeah, that makes sense. Rather than pushing and pushing and fighting, it's like, you know, to...
Fight it for what?
Find your people.
For three shitty towns and an okay.
Yeah.
Three shitty shows in an okay town.
Yeah.
Where I'm away from my kids and wife, and I might make a couple $100 at the end of the weekend after my expenses.
Yeah.
It's not worth it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's so that comes with age, wisdom, and stuff. Knowing okay, where do I want to focus my time? And
right.
Yeah. Well, that's very cool. And so depending on when I get this up, come see him at. In Ottawa, Yuck Yucks. And you live in Toronto now?
I live in Barrie, which is an hour
north
of Toronto.
Oh, right. You said you were moved to that. Was in your act, too. I moved to Barrie, and everybody's in Barrie now. It's kind of
a lot of comics. A lot of people are in Barrie, you know, and up there because of the whole work from home thing and bigger homes and bang for your buck and all that stuff.
Yeah, and it's still close enough to Toronto. I interviewed a girl for my podcast who's, I think, doing radio in Barrie now, and she worked her way up for 10 years from little towns. And and that's the thing. So
it's like, you know, if you live in Ottawa, it's like living in Nepean.
Yeah,
or Canada, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. It's close enough, and anything you can work anywhere. Like even all the copywriting jobs now. Like I've been applying as creative director just randomly, and they're like, "Yeah, it'd be online." Like it's like I could do a Toronto creative director job from here, from anywhere.
Be honest, why would you ever give that job up? Even if you were a successful comedian, why would you ever give that job up?
Yeah.
Do you know how much dead time there is? Like all day today, I'm talking to you, I'm doing another thing, but yeah. I could just have a computer. Like, so to me, there was a couple comics, they were IT people. They just brought a computer with them wherever they were on the road.
Yeah.
And they were making like tons of money because they would just do their things online.
Yeah.
And then Friday night, go have some fun at the show.
Yeah.
Kick back.
That's the thing. And that's what I realize now too. Like, I could have, if I had had the balls or whatever, to keep my advertising job and then do comedy at night kind of thing. That would make more sense than just sit all day trying to write jokes.
Because I'll tell you something. Yeah. The second you have more time,
yeah.
less you write.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, I've had nothing but time in for 2 years. And,
right.
And I've done hardly anything.
Right.
It's like, but you need that job. So, yeah, I've got my freelance copywriting. I do voice acting as well. I got my little setup and stuff.
Yep.
So it's like you. So I'm lucky for that. And then... Yeah, but I just want to focus and you know, people like you inspire me, so that's awesome.
All right.
And yeah, and hopefully maybe Spotify will buy this podcast for $150 million. I'll be the next
Joe
Rogan.
Sure, you're the next Joe Rogan.
Exactly.
And maybe next time tell me you're wearing all black so I don't wear all black so we don't look exactly the same.
Well, you know what? I came upstairs yesterday in a black t-shirt and my mom was like, oh, look at you. You're like Leonard Cohen. I'm like, I am, because I had gray pants on. And I'm like, maybe I'm like Leonard Cohen. I'm like, and then I decided, you know what? I'm going to wear nothing but black. That'll be my uniform. I'll be like Mark Zuckerberg, not have to think about things. And and I have one black shirt that doesn't have holes in the armpits, so I picked it out of the laundry.
Yep.
And I put on my black pants. And I'm like, I'm going to wear this, and I feel like it's slimming. I want to lose some weight, but I thought this will be slimming. This is my hoodie I wear when I feel fat. So like I put it on, you know, like because it's I wouldn't want. Anyways, it's a whole thing. But yes, I'll let you know. And next time, actually, I'll have a Spark the Genius T-shirt with a lightning bolt and my whole swag thing. And
there
everything.
We go.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool. All right. And thanks. And where should people go? Because I know your website is comedyhorror.com.
Comedyhorror.com.
Yeah. How did you build your website? Like, is it you made it yourself?
No, nope,
like,
paid someone.
All right. I got to do that. I got to have a website because nobody really goes anywhere. And you don't want to be relying on Mark Zuckerberg to have your Facebook page.
I had a website since 95, 96. I was of two people. I won't name the other comedian because I don't like him.
Yeah.
But there was very few people who started with the web as early as I did.
Yeah.
So I've always had a website. I've always paid someone to do it.
Yeah.
Because I'm a firm believer in, you know what? If you do it yourself and you can have it as good as everything else, great. But if you can't, cut it off. Pay someone, do it right.
That's what I need to do. I noticed a girl's website the other day, and I messaged her, and she's like, oh, I use this software. I'm like, yeah, I want one like that. I should stop trying to screw around with WordPress and have a crappy blog and just pay it. Especially, do you find that people find you online? Like, did they actually come to your site? And they, I don't know.
When I used to do, like, so the last 5 years, even before the pandemic, I've been kind of slowing my career down a bit. So do people still go to my website? Yes, but I find my website traffic and things are higher when I'm touring.
Right, they'll look you up.
They'll look me up. They'll come see a show. They'll be like, I didn't know this guy existed, and they'll look me up.
That's good. And I mean, you need a place where you can just at least direct people and say, go check out my thing and all that. Dane Cook was big on that. He was the early adopter. I remember before YouTube and all that.
Oh, yeah, the whole MySpace.
Stuff. Yeah, MySpace, Friendster. Yeah, MySpace was good.
So, yeah, comedyhorror.com. That's where
all right,
can find
check it out. And also the social medias, you're at comedyhorror.
Yes, my Twitter handle and Instagram is at comedyhorror.
All right. Well, there you go. Thank you so much, Dare. And next time you're on, I'll have a sponsor. I'll be like, oh, and this is brought to you by, but it's not brought to you by anything right now.
All right.
All right. Bye.